This morning, we're going to talk about the future of our church. You know, I believe that probably the most significant decision that I can make on a day-to-day basis in my life is my attitude in life. When I was in high school, our school counselor, he'd pull us all into his office to talk to us occasionally about different things. And usually the very first thing out of his mouth was this: "You have a bad attitude." Has anybody ever told you that you have a bad attitude? Mr. Ledlow told us a lot. We have a bad attitude. He'd get on the PA and talk to the whole school. "We've all got a bad attitude," you know, and he would preach to us what seemed like forever. Attitudes is so important in our lives today. It's more important than our past. It's more important than our education. It's more important than our bankroll. It's more important than fortune and fame, or even pain that we may go through about different circumstances in our lives. Because if we develop a bad attitude, every one of these things are going to go wrong. But if we develop a good attitude, we can handle them in a better way. So sometimes I don't think we realize maybe sometimes what we have in life, and we develop a negative attitude because we don't have what we want. But in reality, we have what we need, and there's a big difference in that. Our attitudes can make a difference in our success and our failure. And this is very true with the church. You know, we develop attitudes in each congregation of the Lord's church. And we need to set aside our attitudes sometimes and develop a better attitude as to how we operate as a congregation of God's people. Now, y'all just gonna have to look at this picture the whole time, okay? Last week, Brother Alan Webster conducted a seminar here at Dawson Road. The topic was how to be successful in evangelism in a secular society. Now, simplify those words. How can we succeed in a society that is corrupted and filled with immorality? That's basically what that means. I thought, and Terry thought, that this was a good topic, that it would be something that could help this congregation to grow and to help us be what we should be and what we need to be. Because I have to tell you, my friends, this congregation is not what it should be, and it is not what it needs to be. We should be moving on every day in every way. You know, our world, our community, our nation has gone through some of the most tremendous changes over the last few years. What used to be unacceptable to mankind generally in this country has now become accepted. What used to be considered wrong in everyone's mind is now becoming glorified. Modern day society has taken a toll on the church. It's taken a toll on religion in general, which, you know, all other religions are different than ours, but they mostly teach morality in their teachings and in their doctrine. And all of that has been affected in general because of the attitude of our society today. You know, God destroyed two vibrant cities for allowing themselves to become corrupt. On a much larger scale, God destroyed the population of the world for the very same reason. because he saw how corrupt this world had become. You know, I have said it many times. In looking at the reasons for the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah and the destruction of the world in general in the days of Noah, I can ask myself constantly, God, what are you waiting for? Why are we still here? Because I feel that we have gone far beyond that which Sodom and Gomorrah went in their corruption against God. I feel that we have gone farther along than the people of the world in the day of Noah's flood. So God, why are we still here? We're corrupt. We're vicious. A terrible world. And it's taken such a toll on us. And it has taken a tremendous toll on the church. Even to the point where sometimes I find myself asking these questions. Do we even have a future as a church? And what can we do to fight this corruptive society and survive and grow as a church? Well, I want to tell you that last week, Brother Webster addressed many of these fears. And he gave many ideas and many solutions as to how we can battle this corrupt society that we live in. He told us things that we can do to keep our church on the right track. He told us things that we can do to strengthen ourselves as a church. He told us things that we can do that we can be successful in taking the gospel of Jesus Christ to this corrupt world. So today, I want us to talk about the future of our church. Or even do we have a future? And what we can do maybe to help us get a future. On the one hand, future can be viewed as an opportunity. But yet on the other hand, future must also be viewed as a choice. Which simply means it depends on our priorities, our attitudes in life, and how we choose to live as people. That will help determine the future of our church. We're going to get down to an individual level today because none of us are the same. We all have different levels of faith. We all have different viewpoints as far as the priorities and the value of the church. So that's what we're going to talk about today. I thought it was pretty interesting that throughout the seminar, Alan chose to take a positive approach to how we look at the future of our church. His evangelistic methods did not mean going into the lost, breathing fire, condemning them to hell, and then trying to preach them out. He didn't mention anything like that. Instead, he talked about the positive approach as the things that we can do not only to help ourselves, but to help those who are out there. And I think he's totally right. And I'm not saying now that we need to ignore sin. And I'm not saying that we should not take a stand with God in condemning sin. We should never leave alone problems that we identified that could damage our congregation and damage our Christianity as a whole. But what he zeroed in on was taking a positive approach to our future. What can we do to make it better? Not necessarily what we're doing to hurt it, but what can we do to make it better? That's what I want to talk about today. First, a positive approach begins with a serious and sincere faith. Now, I'm not going to ask you this morning to tell me how serious you are with your faith in the church, in God, Jesus Christ, and the Holy Spirit. In Daniel chapter 3, King Nebuchadnezzar made a decree that went out to the people. At any time they heard the sound of the musical instruments, that they were to fall down and worship the image that he had set up there in the city. And if they refused, they would be thrown into the fiery furnace. Well, three young men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of God, they refused to obey this command. In verse 17, these three young men literally looked Nebuchadnezzar in the eye and they said this: "If this be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from this burning fiery furnace. And he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up." You know, you kind of get the idea when you read verse 17 here particularly that you couldn't discourage these three young men. Their mind was made up. They are going to serve God, and it doesn't matter what the king says, what the king does, I'm going to do the right thing. Have we all done that? Faith gives us a rise to hope. And hope gives rise to courage. And courage gives us the kind of living that does not give in to anything. It gives us a determination that we are going to do the right thing regardless of what anyone says. This is the kind of faith, my friends, we need today in the church. You know, Hebrews chapter 11 gives us several examples of faith that caused people to accomplish some great things for God. Men such as Noah, who built that boat the size of a warship to house animals to survive the oncoming flood, which, by the way, rain had never fallen upon the earth. And then God says, it's going to rain. Noah could have easily said, "Well, Lord, I've never seen rain. I'm not going to build this boat." But through faith, he built that boat and saved the lives of him, his wife, his sons, and their wives, and a sampling of all the animals of the earth. Men such as Abraham, who God said, "Pack up and go," and Abraham packed up and went and did not know where he was going to. Who would do that? I had reservations about coming to Albany, Georgia, and I came down here to see what it was like, and I still had reservations about coming to Albany, Georgia. But we came anyway. Isaac, Jacob, Moses, even the children of Israel. Can you imagine standing at the edge of the Red Sea and those waters did part? But now stepping down into that, that's another matter. What if I get down into the middle of that sea and it comes back together? They crossed the River Jordan in faith. Faith that God would hold those waters apart for them. And marching around the walls of Jericho, what, God? If we march around the walls of Jericho, if we don't fire our weapons, if we don't fight, and them walls are going to come down anyway? They did it, and the walls did come falling down. Through faith, they did wonderful things. And I want to tell you, my friends, the future of this church will be determined whether or not we have that kind of faith. You toss out our faith, and you leave us on our own, and we're worthless. We need to stand securely in our faith in God and His Son, Jesus Christ. And we need to realize that we can tap into a power that has been able to lift God's people to victory over everything on the face of this earth. That's how we have a future in our church. The second point of this lesson is this: a positive approach thrives in an atmosphere that is filled with love and that is filled with respect. Now, I want you to notice the words of Jesus. First of all, Matthew 22, beginning with verse 37. He said, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the great and first commandment. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. And then John kind of echoes this in John 13, verses 34 and 35. A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another. We talked about that this morning in Bible class. Those of you who wasn't here will never know what went on there. And it was very important. Very important. Just as I have loved you, Jesus said, you are also to love one another. By this all people know that you are my disciples, if you have loved one for another. Do we love everybody in this room today? If you don't, you are not a disciple of Jesus Christ. Jesus just said it himself right here. We have got to be filled with love. Now this is far more important than you think. The future of any church will be a failure unless love becomes something that is real and not just something that we talk about. Because you know I talk about love all the time from this pulpit. You hear me week after week, and usually every week I will mention it some way, shape, form, or fashion, love that we have to have for one another. People who love God, listen to this now, people who love God will never get tired of God. They won't get tired of hearing His Word and learning about Him. They won't get tired of serving Him every day and not just being pacified by coming here. Some of us only once a week, others two and three times. You know, every congregation of the Lord's church loves God differently. I almost didn't do this, but I'm going to do this because you need to know this. Let me share with you this morning how we showed our love for God last week during our seminar that we had. We have 98 people on our church roll. That's what Denise uses every week to write down who's here and who is not. We do keep a record of that, by the way. We know to the person who's here and who's not. Out of that number, there are about 70 people who actually would consider themselves as a part of this congregation. I'm excluding children. I'm excluding those who are regular visitors but not members here. And I'm excluding our shut-in who cannot be here. We have about 70 people who would consider themselves as a part of this congregation. Sunday morning, from that 70-person row, 49 was here. Now, believe it or not, that's just about average. That's just probably about what we have today. Sunday night, that number fell to 44. And I was actually impressed with that because we generally don't do that well on Sunday nights. Monday night, same 70 people on that row. We dropped down to 38. You might say, well, we had a lot more here than that than 38. Yeah, we did. We had 72. The rest of them were visitors. Tuesday night was embarrassing. I'm not even going to say it. But this is how we love our church. We don't even want to come together as a church family. There's something wrong with us, folks. And we need to fix this in a terrible way. Why? Why did this happen? I don't know. I can't tell you why this happened. But it happened. Sports is a big one, yeah. Let me tell you something. I know it's baseball season. I know our kids love to play ball in the summertime and we love to go watch them. But you would, let me tell you something else I know. You'd be surprised how much church people will prioritize baseball, football, sports of any kind above God and His church. It's amazing how people will do that. And yes, we have people here at this church that do that. Maybe it was vacation. Maybe it's going to the beach. I don't know. I know it's summer. People like to get away, but you would be amazed at how many, quote, Christian people use the word vacation to get out of going to church and worshiping God while they're on their vacation. And yes, we have people here that do that too. Maybe it's just like we didn't like staying at church so late because last week, yeah, we stayed a little later than we normally would. Maybe people are tired of that. I don't know. But let me tell you something that I do know. There will not be any baseball in heaven or any other sport for that matter. Because God is not going to let anything in that will get in the way of His people gathering around His throne. And I doubt very seriously that the river of life in heaven have any beaches. Because again, God is not going to allow anything in that is going to get away, get around, or keep His people from worshiping Him and serving Him. And time? You don't want to spend time with God? You don't want to spend time with his people? There will be no time in heaven. So how are you going to get around that? And let me tell you something else I know. And if I read my Bible right, I'm pretty sure that I'm right about this. There is not going to be anyone in heaven who place these things in a higher priority than they do their God and their church. Now think about that. And yes, we have people who do that. And I am thankful. I will not stand in those shoes when I stand before God in heaven. Now you may say, Farron, you're being harsh, you're being cruel, you're being mean. Yes, I'm being mean, and I'm doing it on purpose because I'm concerned for your soul. I don't want you standing before God and Him sending you to hell because you thought football was more important than He was. Now you may get mad at me and want to fire me for the sermon. I don't know. But you needed to hear that. It is time that we acknowledge this church with love. And if we're going to acknowledge a church and filled with love, it is going to be because we behave like a church that is filled with love. And not look for a way to get around God. And not look for a way to get away from God or to put God on a back burner. And we need to seriously think about this. Now, the last thing I want to talk about is the fact that we need to believe that God has a purpose for us. And you'd be surprised how many people in the Dawson Road congregation who feel like there's nothing I can do for this church. Because I've had you tell me that. I've had several people tell me that. I don't know how to do anything. And then I love this one. I'm too old to do anything. You're still breathing, aren't you? If you're breathing, you're not too old to serve God. And God expects you to serve Him, regardless of your age. Listen to this. The Lord is speaking to us through the Apostle Paul, Ephesians 2, verse 10. For we are His workmanship, created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared beforehand Him that we should walk in them. He has given us purpose, folks. He has given us a reason to exist. He has given us a reason to be a part of His congregation, to be a part of His family, and to work and live as a part of His family. Psalmist David says it about the same thing in a different way, Psalm 138, verse 8, the Lord will fulfill His purpose for me. Now, you know, we can leave off them last two words. The Lord will fulfill His purpose. You know what that means? He's going to have His way, whether you like it or not. David says, I want Him to fulfill His purpose for me and because of me. He goes on to say, your steadfast love, O Lord, endures forever. Do not forsake the work of your hands. You know who the work of God's hands are? We are. We are the workers that God uses. We are the hands that God uses. That's why we need to live a life full of love, a life full of service, because we're all that God has to reach our world. You know, a story is told of a man who was building a new building. He was a farmer. He was building the new building. This guy walks up to him and he says, farmer, what are you building here? What kind of a building is this? What are you doing? And the farmer said, well, if I can rent it out, it's going to be a nice little rustic cottage for somebody to live in. But if I can't, it's going to be a barn for my cows. What is this church? Is it something for us to live in as God's children? Or is this something that is no more valuable than a barn for his animals? Sometimes I'm afraid we look at building the church this way. We throw a few things together and we sit back to see what happens. That is no way to build a church. Friends, I can't stress enough just how important it is that we think about God's plans and not our own. God has given us several tasks. Alan mentioned a lot of them last week. God has given us the task to go into the world to preach the gospel. Well, that was the Great Commission. He told the disciples on that day, he went back to heaven, and he's telling us today, go into all the world. Now, let me tell you something. Let me tell our sports fans something, those who like to go to the ball games instead of coming to church. Last week, Alan Webster told us that we could take God into the ballpark with us. What? How can I do that? Well, he said you can take God into the ballpark and you can talk to the guy sitting next to you that you have never seen before and probably will never see again. And you can introduce him to God. Don't worry about it if you're going to make him mad. He's not a friend. He's not going to leave you. So you don't have to think about that. A lot of us won't tell our friends about our Christianity because we're afraid they won't want to be our friend anymore. Well, it doesn't matter at the ballpark. We don't know the guy sitting next to us. You tell him about God. You invite him to the services of the church. You invite him to be a part of Christianity. Yeah, we can go to the ballpark with that. He taught us a lot of things that we can do. Each day, simple things. Things that every one of us can do. Things that we already do every day with people who are our friends. And they're simple things. They're easy things. Things that anybody can do. And I was amazed when I saw that list. And I felt embarrassed because I hadn't already thought of it myself. God has sent us into the world to ease pain and suffering of those around us. God wants to hear our praise and see our devotion. And if God can go all the trouble to make his plans of action, what gives us the right to think that we can just throw a few things together and just sit back, hit and miss, and see if it works? That's not how we grow a church. We've got to take this serious. God's eternal purposes rest in our hands. So, we have a job to do. I believe that great things are possible in our congregation and in the Lord's church in general. We've got some terrific opportunities before us. We have picked up two new works this year alone, in Gray, Georgia, and in Tiger, Georgia. Those churches are growing and doing well, and we're helping them do that. Send them a letter thanking them for their efforts. We've got addresses. We've got phone numbers. Give them a call. Let them know you appreciate them. Let the missionary know you appreciate him and what he's doing. Encourage them. help them. That's a big help. When someone encourages you, does it just make you want to go that much faster and try that much harder? Do that for other people. And again, that's something anybody can do. We've got some really good people in this church. We've got a lot of talent in this church. And it just simply needs to be used. But it's going to take work. And first of all, we must have faith in God that we can do it. And then we must also have faith in ourselves that we can do it. What we need to do now is just to get everybody on board to do this work. Maybe you're here this morning and you need to change the way you've been practicing your Christianity because you really haven't been doing your Christianity much at all. Maybe it's time you change that. I don't know, Terry, I don't know if you have or not. I've never had anybody come up to me and say, is there something I can do? I want to work. I haven't had that happen yet. I would love for that to happen. Maybe you're here today, you need to make that change in your life as a Christian. We want to give you an opportunity to do that. Maybe you're here today and you're not a Christian. You need to obey His word so that you can begin your future as a Christian and you can help our future as a church. The lesson is yours. Come if you need while we stand and sing.